The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. And that's because the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe has some great features like the available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads, and much, much more. So think about those places that you want to go, the things that you'd like to do this weekend, and where the Santa Fe can take you. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Welcome back to the First Cut Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Gaiman, and it is Mayakoba Golf Classic Week, and we've got all the storylines to break down. So we've assembled the team. It's Kyle Porter. Welcome in, Kyle. Good morning, sir. How was your week break from the PGA Tour?
It was great. A week is like basically the NFL offseason for the PGA Tour. So yeah, I'm refreshed and ready to go for the last two events of the fall.
That's right. So two quote unquote real events left until we head over to Maui and the Tournament of Champions. And also, we've got Mark Immelman to provide some great insight. I've got questions loaded up and teed up, ready to go for you, Mark. I'm ready to rock and roll this week. What say you?
How's it? I am looking forward to being where I've been looking forward to being with you guys. And just for the record, Kyle, hey, Falcons got a win.
So I saw that. I saw it. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, boy. Against New Orleans, too, which is a big deal.
Yeah, certainly did not see that one coming myself. But all right, let's hop into this. It's Mayakoba Golf Classic. Matt Kuchar returns to the scene of the crime, where all of the stories coming out from last year after his win, and did he tip his caddy enough? Did he not? All that good stuff comes out of this. So Kyle, let's start with you. I don't know if there is a hostile situation on the PGA Tour, but like, is Kuchar going to have to answer questions from the media about El Tucan and whether he tipped enough and whether he ended up making it right?
Yeah, the El Tucan Invitational, I think, is what this event is heretofore known as. I think it's been like the scrutiny was so intense in the months that followed. I don't know that revisiting it is really going to pique people's interest. I mean, sure, you're going to have some random questions and a couple things here or there. But, I mean, we revisited it at Sony. We did it at Riviera. We did it for, like, basically two straight months. And even into, like, March and April. And I just don't know that it feels like it's played out. I don't know that it's not going to be a story, but I don't think it's going to be as big as maybe – it would have been if it hadn't been so scrutinized over those kind of following months after it happened.
It really did feel like this story went on forever. It just like it never died. Even like there was even when the joke that Rory made like at the end of the Wyndham Championship about, oh, Kuchar really loves his. I just feel like this story lasted forever.
Yeah, it did. Like and it's almost become. You know how some of the storylines get like embedded into just the week to week narrative, like Patrick Reed is Captain America, like that kind of thing. It's almost like it's just been embedded now and people are just going to reference it kind of offhand for the next however many years. But I don't know that it's going to be like this kind of shine the spotlight. Golf Channel is doing like a 3-hour documentary on what happened type of thing. Maybe it will. Who knows? Maybe
I'd watch that.
Yeah. I might watch it too. Did you guys see the article about I think it was the New York Post, Mark Canizero, about just kind of the follow up 1 year later?
I did not see that.
It was he kind of just talked about how like the funniest part of it was that El Tucan wanted to use part of the $50,000 that Kuchar eventually gave him to start or maybe to like help along. It was either to start or help fund like this laundromat that he was working on, kind of a side business. And there was a line in there about how he was going to name it like Kuchar's Laundromat.
Oh man. Oh,
God. Which is incredible, which it was so funny, but it kind of talked about in a lot of ways how it's helped him, because everybody that goes to this resort, everybody that plays there is like, I want L2 Can as my caddy, and they tip him well.
And
it's
they have
like,
to tip him well. Right?
Yeah, exactly. So it's almost been a long-term net win for him to get all that attention early on.
That's hilarious. So Mark, I mean, I think let's look at this from Kuchar's side of things. There's a million things that go on the PGA Tour, inside the ropes, outside the ropes, with distractions. You know, it could be another player in your group is playing slow. It could be someone yelling something from the crowd. It could be that you did not tip your caddy well enough last year, and now you have to come back and talk about it. But from a player's perspective, how can Kuchar kind of compartmentalize some of the distractions that might come along with his title defense this year and really just focus on golf?
You know, that's a really good question. The thing to first off realize for everyone listening to this is that these guys, even though they appear like superheroes to all of us, is they're still just human beings. And we've all been in that situation where we've misbehaved, or you go to the principal's office or whatever the case might be. And then you get back to that situation and you sort of slink your way into the room and you try not to be noticed by anyone. So there's some of that on the go for Kuchar, but the one thing that he does very, very well is he sort of deals with stuff as it comes along. And I'm sure when he gets into the press room, his best port of call would be just to nip the thing in the bud right away and say, look, we're back here. I'm happy to defend. Last year was a misstep, whatever. And sort of say the right things, not that he doesn't mean them, and then just get back to business as usual. I would expect, just to get some closure to this thing, that he should seek out L2 Can and go, hey, buddy, are we good? Sorry, and all the rest of it. And go through that sort of thing just to close it so you can get back to the business at hand. Because that's the most important thing for a player, is to try and somehow just put a stop sign with wherever the mind has been going. Because, you know, we all know that the power of the mind, you know, we can create all sorts of drama inside of our heads, which eventually will affect the player's physical performance. So that's the best way, in my opinion, to do it. But the truth of it is, everybody's different. You know, everyone deals with things in their own way. It's just a function of dealing with it in the best way possible for you to make sure that you can bring out your best, because really this golf course was built for a guy like Matt Kuchar, and it's a week where he can really make some inroads on that FedEx Cup points list.
Yeah, I really like that this is could potentially be, you know, the closing the book on this, right? It's 1 year later. You know, you imagine this isn't going to be a huge storyline every single year, but the first time it comes back, it could be. And Mark, what we've seen kind of with other athletes and golfers is sometimes actually being inside the ropes might be a little bit of a relief for him. You know, if kind of he's dealing with questions in the media, all that good stuff, it's, hey, you know, the 4 or 4.5 hours that he spends actually playing his round might be a little bit of, I don't even know what the word I'm looking for. It might be the best place for him to be. Would you agree that him actually playing golf might be a relief this week?
I do. Inside the ropes, you're back in the grind. And when you're in there, you know, there's not much time for the mind to wander, even though, you know, between shots, there's some light conversation and such. But you're out there and you're working. And let's say the weather gets rough. Pardon me, we have seen some. Then you're grinding even harder. So the mind is sort of occupied with the job at hand. I mean, my mind is wondering right now. I don't know if L2 Can is caddying for anyone, but wouldn't it be hilarious if he was on someone's bag and Kuchar is drawn with him in round 3 and Kuch walks onto the tee, because we know Matt Kuchar has got a fierce wit and a really good sense of humor to walk up to L2 Can and try and put the club down in the bag and say, oh, sorry, you're not on my bag. Just a joke about it. But there is some solace between the ropes. It's you and your guy, and you've got a job to do. So, yeah, I'm sure he's looking forward to Thursday rolling around just to get the show on the road.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point you made there. So, you know, Kuchar goes out, he wins here last year, then he ends up winning again in January at the Sony, and that was really the big chunk of FedEx Cup points that he needed. So, Kyle, you and I had talked about this where, you know, the way the schedule is set up, where it's so compact and there's a big event, you know, every month during the summer, getting those FedEx Cup points early in the season, I mean, I looked this up. 1,000 FedEx Cup points for 2 wins for Matt Kuchar, basically before the Tour Championship, you know, he would have been solidly through to the BMW if he had never made another point throughout the year. So can we start to expect some of these bigger name players, some of these guys to get a head start on the season, try to bank these early FedEx Cup points so that they have a little bit more flexibility when it comes to, you know, the big part and the big meaty part of the schedule later in the year?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, just think about the guys that we haven't seen in the fall, right? It's basically been, what, Ricky and DJ? And yeah. Ricky got married and DJ's been hurt, and that's it. And so, you know, you see Rory a couple times. You see Tiger making an appearance. You see Justin Thomas quite a bit. I think with the expansion of just how many events there are in the fall, and look, like, Rory's talked about this. He talked about this at the Tournament of Champions. I think it was last year.
Yeah, it was.
Where he said, like, I don't want to get to the Honda Classic and be 160th in the FedEx Cup. And that it kind of surprised me because I was like, does Rory care, like, where he's at in the FedEx Cup? But apparently he does. And I think that, yeah, it just – maybe it's a mental thing of, like, you don't want to go to Sony or to even like the farmer to Tory and be like 101st because you only played one time in the fall. And, you know, the other thing is, like, there's the events in the fall are not small events. I was looking through some purses today. I mean, CJ Cup's like 9.5 mil. Zozo's like 9.5 mil. Like, these are no cut events. They're just the PGA Tour has done everything that they can to make it compelling for their biggest stars to go out and play and get some of these FedEx Cup points going into the following year.
Yeah, there's big money to be made. There are, you know, the 500 FedEx Cup points for, you know, Mayakoba are the same as the 500 FedEx Cup points for Pebble Beach, you know, in February. It's all the same. So Mark, I mean, obviously some guys have the ability to pick and choose their schedule. You know, Rory can tailor. We've seen Tiger tailor his schedule to his benefit. But what about the rest of these guys? You know, for a regular tour player, what kind of goes into making that schedule each year? And is it a lot of personal preference? Are some guys playing because they have to play every week to make enough points? Like, take us behind what might go into a schedule making before the season starts.
Well, it's kind of a little bit of D, all of the above. But just to quickly revisit what Kyle said, you know, about earning these points, Rory referenced it at the Tournament of Champions. Kyle mentioned. And then when you're playing, if you're playing from so far behind, sometimes you get the sense of urgency, which then forces one's hand when it's really just a marathon. So if you can get yourself to the front of the peloton, then you can sort of play your own kind of game throughout the season. And that's why we're seeing McIlroy and the blue chippers show up in the fall so much. And then to the schedule thing, I mean, you get the guys coming off the Korn Ferry Tour. They in that situation where you've got to play everything you can get into, and then everyone's got, almost like the FedEx Cup points list in the playoffs, they've got this re-rank in the back of their mind, because if you don't play well, then your re-rank is bad, then you get into fewer events, and then all of a sudden there's this urgency when you get into an event, and there's extra pressure that's brought to bear. So there's that element for the new guys on tour. For the established guys figuring out the schedule, the first thing I would say is just bearing family commitments in mind. Again, human beings, and they've got to deal with, you know, kids doing this and anniversaries there, and certainly some time off. They bear in mind golf courses where they're comfortable and where they play well. They'll always get with their stats guy or their performance guy to say, okay, which is the courses I really do well at, because that's where we're going to try and go, and that's where we're going to try and peak. Then you connect with a swing coach and say, okay, here are the ones we've circled. Here are the bright spots. We want to start to work towards that. So then that's when windows of performance are brought to bear, and players start to look at like 3 to 4 week periods where it's like three on, one off, or whatever the case might be. So you bear in mind performance. You bear in mind family commitments. You bear in mind, you know, what times of the year you play well. There's a lot that goes into it. And I will say this. The guys that are now battling the re-rank, the Korn Ferry grads, they are hoping to be in a place, and you'll hear them all speak about it, when they earn enough points or they become exempt, to be able to go, well, I can set my schedule. But setting that schedule is not as easy as what people think. And sometimes, you like Rory, you say, well, now I've got to revisit something else because everyone else is earning points. So it's a fluid deal, but there's a lot that goes into scheduling, and it's not as easy as one thinks.
Yeah, the player scheduling to me is something that I just love to think about, and especially now with all the new data that we're getting access to. Hey, where do you play the best? If you know, you can almost in theory make your optimal and optimize a schedule for each one of these guys, which is kind of really exciting for a data nerd like myself. Now, one thing that these guys are going to have to deal with a little bit this week is it appears like it's going to be a little wet and rainy. The rained in Mayakoba yesterday. I know the Pro-Am got delayed a bit today. There's potential for Thursday and Friday showers. So, Mark, when you've got a forecast like this, and you know you might be on, you might be off, you might have to play 36 holes in a day, how does that mess with a player's routine? Because we know these guys are creatures of habit, and how can, you know, rain not become a big detriment to you, and you can kind of go out there and play your game?
It is a real challenge. The routine brings comfort. It's kind of like the comfort blanket. And if you can schedule things and you know what you have to do, there's an element of comfort. And if you're comfortable, you can swing freer. And if you swing freer, you hit better shots. So the unknown makes it difficult. But on the flip side of the coin, on a golf course like El Camaleon, which is like single file, man, you've got to drive it accurately around there. The rain softens the place. It makes the targets play wider. So the golf course will be a little easier. The big deal, though, through this all, Rick, is just to try and get as much rest as possible, because the one element of this that the listeners might not bear in mind is some of those 27-hole, 36-hole days, you're up at 4 a.m. in the morning to make it to the 6:30 restart or whatever the case might be. And so it's exhausting. So you've got to try and rest as much as you can, and you'll see guys during breaks sometimes napping and just recharging and replenishing, because it does get quite grueling, even though the conditions underfoot become a little easier.
Yeah, you got to make sure you have enough peanut butter and jelly sandwiches in the bag, I think. Or if you get into the clubhouse, you don't want to eat too much. It's always I love this stuff. It throws in just an extra monkey wrench that these guys have to deal with. But you know, Kyle, I don't want to throw you on the spot here, because this is not something that we had talked about. But what I find very interesting is this tournament, Mayakoba, and the Sony Open have had a handful of similar winners. You know, Kuchar won both events last year. Patton Kizzire won both events the year prior. Mark Wilson has won both of these events. I was trying to rack my brain and think if there were any two other courses that had such a similar crossover of, you know, winners or success, and I couldn't really think of any. So I'll put you on the spot and see if you can think of one.
Oh, man. you know, I think the places that you see that the most are like at the major level. I don't think you see it a lot, and I don't know why that is. I don't know if that's because Augusta was designed with St. Andrews in mind. I don't know if it's like that deep, or if it's just like the best guys in the world play their best during majors, and so sometimes there's crossover there. But yeah, to your point, like on a small, and you know, I think sometimes it's easy to I don't know, group some of the, like, the shorter courses together. We talk about, like, Zach Blair, and you're like, where can Zach Blair win? Well, he can win at Sony. He can win at RBC Heritage. He can win Colonial. And,
yep,
you know, maybe he can win somewhere like Mayakoba, and that might be it. And so I think maybe that's, like, where your grouping comes in with some of this stuff, is just shorter versus longer. I don't know that maybe it's more complex than that. I don't know. I'd love to hear your opinion on it. But when I think about stuff like that, that's the first place that my mind goes.
No, it's probably not more complex than that. It's probably somewhat random, but no, I think you're right. I mean, courses that require certain skill sets, whether it is driving accuracy, whether it's small greens and you have to throw darts, I do think you start lumping those together. I mean, even for a while, I just pulled up quickly, you know, Genesis winners, and you compare those to Masters winners, and you know, Bubba's won both of them. Phil Mickelson, obviously, Adam Scott. I mean, Mike Weir, I think, has won both of them. There's really some of these courses just fit, whether it, that list was kind of lefties too. Maybe that's a little something. Just fit different golfers in different ways. So I think you're right. There's probably, yeah, five or six courses where, and I think your short hitter example is perfect, that, you know, this is the real chance for those guys to run out there and try to capture a win.
Well, if I can add to that, it certainly is a golf course thing. And oftentimes it's the grasses on the golf course. And if you look at El Camaleon and you look at wildlife or insects, it's similar underfoot. And you get some guy like a Patton Kizzire who likes Bermuda grass greens and does well with balls that fly a little bit out of Bermuda roof. It's people that are just comfortable with environments. And so some of it is course design. Some of it is agronomy. Some of it really, and this is at a base level and it's kind of ethereal some, but you know, you just get to places where you're comfortable. You know, it's whether it's hotel or it's whether it's, you know, the family's along for the week. There's these other elements too. So it's a little bit of everything, but certainly I feel like it's a golf course conditioning and a golf course design thing too.
Yeah, and Mark, since you brought up the grasses, I kind of love this because this is, you know, the thing that I think a lot of people overlook. Is it just usually, and what it seems to be is usually kind of the conditions you've grown up in? So if you grew up on the West Coast and you're dealing with Kikuyu all the time or whatever it might be, that's what you're more comfortable on. Is it really just I assume it's just a matter of that's what you've played on the most, that's what you're most comfortable with, and when you get onto the PGA Tour and you get back to those regions, you probably feel better there than you do in places that you have not seen certain flyer lies or something like that.
No doubt. California dudes play well in California courses because they're comfortable on Poania. You can speak to some East Coast guy who comes off Bermuda Champions Bermuda, which is beautiful. Poania greens are like a puzzle to them, and you just can't understand how the ball goes. So there's a mindset, but the big thing is the comfort level and the trust. You know, if I've played junior golf on Bermuda my entire life, I have a trust and there's a factor involved where I know if I do this, then I can likely expect that. And that is what every professional golfer, indeed every golfer, is looking to do. So if I've been in a certain environment and I know the ball's likely to react, there's trust. And when there's trust, there's comfort. And when there's comfort, it starts to flow on to other elements and other departments of the game. So there is no doubt that if one's been in a certain environment for a long time, it does put one at ease, and so the game improves.
I love it. Okay, Mark, we're going to let you go here shortly, but I got to get your opinion on the President's Cup picks. Ernie Els, Tiger Woods named their captain's picks last week, and we have quite a few of those players in the field. Abraham Anser coming home to his native Mexico to play this event. We've got Matt Kuchar, Tony Finau, Jason Day, Joaquin Niemann, CT Pan, Adam Hadwin, all in the field. And this great note that we have here, this is the 1 week out of 52 that Sungjae is going to take off, but I bet you he's playing somewhere, right? Like, he's going to tee it up in some like corporate scramble event. Like, I don't know. I think he's going to be playing somewhere.
Right.
Yeah. But so Mark, I mean, I'd love to get your opinion. I mean, you had actually nailed it, I believe, when we chatted last about getting someone like Joaquin Niemann on this international team, which honestly, until you had mentioned it, I was like, wow, I'd never even considered that. And that's a great type of player who has probably played a lot of match play. What did you think of, let's start, I think Ernie's picks were much more interesting than Tiger's were, but what did you think of the international side and where Ernie went?
I like the picks. I was chatting with a few folks over last weekend, and I think Jason Day obviously going back to the sand belt is a great idea, because in match play, it's about putting, really. We've got competitive golfers. If you make putts, you win. And in an 18-hole match play match, someone like Jason who fills it up on greens at which he's comfortable, I think that was a masterclass, even though he hasn't been in the best of form. Joaquin Niemann, I think, was a no-doubt pick. As we look to the future and as the internationals try and breed a core lineup, there's no doubt that he and his attitude and the young, vivacious way about him will be a part of the mix. Sungjae, my daughter could have. And then Adam Hadwin, I had talked about him some. You know, Corey Connor's name was tossed out there, and Ben Ahn, I thought, would have been a handy pick. I think Hadam was a smart selection, though, because he brings a certain quiet leadership about him. And I know the President's Cup international coaches weren't concerned because there's a young, fresh team, but you do need some veterans in the locker room. And Hadwin has played a President's Cup, so having him in there was a good idea. And he's playing well, which is a good thing. As far as Tiger goes, well, we all sort of knew who he was going to pick. We knew he was going to go with himself. Woodland is a great pick. Finau is a fantastic pick. He plays well with everyone. And so the Americans sort of made a lot of sense. For me, the big question, and I know a bunch of the internationals are asking this too, is Brooks likely to play? And if he doesn't, who is the fill-in? And that brings up an interesting argument because, you know, Ricky pulled out this week because he's not well. He hasn't played very much. So where do you go there? Obviously, Patrick Reed is in the lineup. So I thought all the picks made a lot of sense and there was nothing really overly controversial at all.
Where would you go, Mark? Sorry,
where would I go?
If Brooks is but not, if Brooks Steve, can't play.
You want me to say Speed?
No, I was going to propose instead of – so Ricky's got this thing. So he's not playing Mayakoba, but he's got this bacterial infection, which sounds like the worst thing in the world. Apparently it's not too, too bad. But the guy that I'm really intrigued by is not Spieth, although I am intrigued by him, is Kevin Kisner.
If you were going to put me a gun to my head, say, who are you going with? Ricky has got a lot of allure about him, and he's fantastic in the team room, and that's an important thing. But Kiz, the way he plays, the grit about him, he was dynamite at the previous President's Cup. He plays well with anybody. And remember I said you pick a guy who can putt? Well, Kisner is he's a weapon around the greens, and so I wouldn't even bat an eyelid if I was Captain Woods.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Well, on that note, Mark, we're going to let you get out of here. We're going to take a short break. Kyle and I are going to come back and wrap this up with some fantasy and some betting stuff. But as always, Mark, we really appreciate your time this morning.
Appreciate you guys. Take care, man.
See you, Mark.
All right. We'll be back in just a second.
Did you know that more than 75% of Americans will experience foot pain in their lifetime, but only 10% will seek out a solution for that pain? Those numbers do not add up to me, and I know it can be confusing, the biomechanics of the foot, the bones, the muscles, everything in between, but solving foot pain is simple, and that's where Superfeet comes into play. These Superfeet insoles go into your shoes, give your feet comfort and support where they need it the most, and redistribute the forces that reduce both stress and strain through your entire body, not just your feet. Insoles have been phenomenal for me personally, and they are clinically proven to decrease fatigue, reduce injury, and improve comfort. I can attest to that myself, especially when walking a lot of golf holes that I play. So if you feel good, you play good, you look good, everything works out from there, and it starts from the bottom up. Visit superfeet.com and enter promo code FIRST at checkout for 15% off your first order plus free shipping.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
All right, welcome back. Kyle, you're still here. We're going to chat through. This is actually a pretty decent field for Mayakoba Golf Classic. We will chat through a little bit of DraftKings, a little bit of fantasy, maybe some bets on the end here. But, you know, is there anything that really kind of stands out to you this week? We talked, Mark kind of mentioned it in the early section. You have to be straight off the tee. But anything else that we should really know about El Chameleon or just this field in general?
Well, the thing that I always get intrigued by this time of year is you've got guys that have played, you know, 3, 4, 5 events, and who is sort of outpacing their normal like strokes gain numbers, right? Whether that's below or above. Like, I think Tony Finau is like 4 strokes per round, like tee to green right now. You're like, well, that's not going to last unless he's going to have the greatest season of all time. So I think like the small sample size actually intrigues me because I think there's a lot of value to be found there for different guys. So I don't know. I think as we've talked about, like, just some of the younger guys that are in this field, Hovland, we're going to talk about him more in a second, but he's fascinating. Joaquin Niemann's one of the favorites in the field. Aaron Wise. There's a lot of young guys that I think are super intriguing. Your boy, Scotty Scheffler.
Love him.
He's 33-1. So I don't know that there's necessarily anything in terms of like the way the course is going to play as much as like what are guys doing going into this tournament. I do have a question for you though, in terms of if you had to give me a couple of guys for like a couple of like DraftKings guys or some of the cash game guys, like who are you looking at for this week?
Yeah, so for cash games, for those of you new to DraftKings or fantasy, what we're looking for are really, really safe guys. You want guys with really high floors. You might not necessarily need them to go out and win the golf tournament, but they can't miss the cut for you. So when you start thinking in that aspect of guys, like Charles Howell III is like defined as that guy, right, where he's just going to post a bunch of top 20s. He's never really going to kill you, and we've seen him play pretty well recently. He had a 36th place finish at the WGC. He had an 8th at the Zozo. And outside of last year, Kyle, he's kind of torn up Mayakoba a little bit. He was trending towards a win. Okay, so 2016, he finished in 17th. 2017, he finished in 7th. 2018, he finished in 4th. So the only natural progression would have been to win last year. Unfortunately, he missed the cut, but still plenty of great course history.
Yeah, he does. He's in the top 12 or so in terms of strokes gained on this course. We'll talk about somebody who's number one later on. You've also got you got Harris English on here.
Harris is interesting because he's a past champion here, which I think not a lot of people remember. It was like five or six years ago. And since then, he's, I think, missed the cut 4 times and finished in 68. It hasn't been a good run since he won here. But Harris English, to no fault of his own, we haven't really talked about him because he didn't play in Asia. He hasn't played since the Houston Open, but he already has 3 top 6 finishes this season. Yeah. He's got a third at the Greenbrier, a 6th at the Sanderson, and a 4th in Houston, which is like, when you compare it to just guys in the early part of the season, he is having one of the best seasons so far, and he's $8,000 on DraftKings, which would make him probably like the 20 or 25th highest priced golfer. So he's someone that I feel comfortable kind of plugging into my lineups as fairly safe.
Harris English is a guy, and I think I've mentioned this on here before, maybe with Chip Patterson, but he's a guy you go watch and you're like, well, that's like the 4th best player in the world. Like when he hits,
oh yeah,
when he hits his irons, when he hits, I mean, the 3 woods that he hits are a joke. And you're like, I don't understand how this guy doesn't. He went to Korn Ferry Finals last year, didn't he?
Oh, good question. That sounds right. I think did he have to play back into it? Yeah,
I think he did. I'm not positive on that, but he was at least kind of on the border there. And I guess like, the eye test for me doesn't match up to what the stats actually are. And I don't know if that's a mental thing only, or if he's been, I don't know. I don't know what the deal is there, but all that to say, like, I believe in the pedigree that he has and just in the swing he has. I think he's an unbelievable ball striker. And then the other guy you got on here, I got a question about this because you've got Lanto Griffin on here. He came coming off the Houston Open win. He's, I believe, $9,000. Is that correct?
Yep.
Are you worried at all? He's number 10 right now in strokes gained putting on the PGA Tour. I know you are team no putt, hashtag.
That's right.
does that worry you at all?
Yeah, I mean, it always worries me when, especially the putter, which is the most volatile of stats week in and week out, that you catch a bad putter and you could easily, you know, miss the cut here if that's like your one main skill set. But we haven't seen it, right? I mean, this season he's got 6 starts already, no worse than an 18th place finish, and he's already captured a win. That's like, okay, maybe the guy's just a really good putter and he's not going to have a bad week ever. I mean, it's what he's doing is incredibly impressive. And when you're looking for someone who has a really high floor, in which case through 6 starts, Griffin certainly has a high floor. This is the type of guy that, you know, I'm just going to plug and play and wait until he burns me.
So, by the way, Harris English went, he did go to the Korn Ferry Finals. He went T14 at the Nationwide Children's Hospital, T26 at the Korn Ferry Tour Championship. And then to your point, he goes T3, T6, T33, T4 to start the PGA Tour season. Which
doesn't
make a whole Doesn't make a whole lot of sense after the season that he had, the way that he ended the 2018-19 PGA Tour season.
Yeah, it's why, and you know, as we see often, these guys find something, right? It's just, oh, maybe it's a swing thought, maybe it's a new drill they're working on, and you see how long they can keep it going. And I really like Harris English, and I hope he's in store for a good year here.
Yeah, I agree. You got a couple other guys on here that are intriguing to me, most notably Joaquin Niemann at 9,800. You think there is there's some value there? Why is that?
Yeah, so moving away from cash games, if you're trying to win all the money, trying to win the big bucks, you really want to take in some more volatility. And I think Joaquin Niemann provides that in the same way that we said he would be great for the President's Cup team, because he can get hot, win you a bunch of matches, or he can lose them all. Like, kind of the same thing here in terms of fantasy and in terms of DraftKings, where obviously has the upside with the win at Greenbrier. But what I like about Niemann is he makes a ton of birdies. And when you're looking at a course that the winning score has been, 18 to 22 under par, could be playing wet, it's going to be a low number that wins this thing, I suspect, this week. And Niemann is a guy that I think can go really, really low.
So for something like, and I don't do, I mean, as people are probably figuring out or are already aware of, I don't do a lot of the DFS. That's not my world like it is yours. And so I guess what you're sort of telling me is that, like, the DraftKings thing is like the Charles Howell Memorial, like, doesn't miss a cut, but doesn't really win. Like, that's the kind of guy you want.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely depends on the format that you're playing in. The Charles Howell Invitational, right? The guy that makes every single cut is a very valuable piece to your lineup. But you know, if you want to win the big contest with a lot of people, you need to have the winner in your lineup, right? And so you're trying to find these guys that could potentially jump up out of nowhere. And win. So that some weeks it's not out of nowhere and it's Rory, and some weeks it's Nate Lashley and it's Max Homa and these guys that, you know, no one in the field is kind of considering, but they go out, they win you a golf tournament, and they win you all the cash.
So that's like the Siwoo Keimer Memorial.
Perfect. Exactly.
Award.
Exactly. Right. Dead first or last. That's what we're looking for, baby.
Siwoo Keimer would be a great golfer. You got one other name on here, Harold Varner III. 7,900. What did you like about him?
Yeah, so generally speaking, I don't get a lot of access to Harold Varner III. I don't play him in a lot of lineups, you know, because we haven't really seen him tap into the upside. The last time that he was in a final group, granted, it was in a major at the PGA Championship with Brooks, and I would have crumbled like a cookie, but we also saw him crumble as well, which is a little bit scary. But playing really well to start the season, he had a good Asian swing, 27th at the Zozo and 26th at the CJ Cup. But what I really like about Varner is, you know, Mayakoba and El Chameleon seems to set up well for him. Fifth place finish in 2016, sixth place finish in 2019. So when you have, you know, two top six finishes in your last three starts at a place, that might indicate that either it sets up well for you or you've got some good vibes around there. So really, Varner to me is just trying to find that intersection between, you know, playing well recently and also has good course history.
I was walking with HV and Brooksy during the final round, and if I remember it right, Varner birdied the first, and Brooks, I think he parred or bogeyed it, and Varner picked up at least a stroke, maybe two on him, and I'm sitting there, and I'm like, huh, that's not how I expected this to go. And then whatever the I think it was the fourth hole of that par five, and Varner made like an eight, and you're like, yeah. Well, yeah, that here we go.
This is how I expected
it
to go.
this is what I was envisioning when the day started.
Well, we've talked about this. You got to knock on the door before it opens. I think he will be better for this moving forward. But let's go over ours. So we've got a winner, a top 10, and a sleeper from each of us. So hit me with your winner for the Mayakoba Golf Classic.
Yeah, I got my guy. I know you're new to this podcast. I only pick Oklahoma State guys or Rory.
Okay. So that's good to know, actually.
So I got Victor Hovland. I think that, you know, he's one of the, I think he's 18 to 1. What is he? I've got it here. He's 18. So you got you got four favorites. You got Jason Day, you got Matt Kuchar, you got Finau, and you got Hovland. And I think there's a world in which Hovland actually has the best season and best next 3 to 5 seasons out of all these guys, and that we're looking back on this in a couple of years. Not that anyone will be looking back on the Mayakoba odds in a couple of years from 2019, but if we are, we'd be like, wow, that was a lot of value. Victor Hovland at 18-1. I just think all the statistical profiles in terms of his driving ability and everything that he does. I mean, you want to talk about team no putt, like this is yeah. your guy right here. And I don't know, that's just exciting to me. I think he is due to get his first win, and I think he gets it this week at Mayakoba.
I'll tell you what, if you're only going to pick guys from one school and Rory, Oklahoma State is probably the school to do it from. You might be in trouble if you had to pick another school, but no, he's a stud. I hope he wins it. I really hope he does, because you're right. We could look back in 3 years and he comes back to Mayakoba and he's like 5-1, and it's like, you know, something crazy. But I'm going to go with Tony Finau. Really, I don't necessarily love I love Victor and I hope he wins it, but like the top half of this, like I could fade Kuchar, I could ignore Jason Day. Like I'm not super thrilled about some of these guys, but Finau to me, despite the tee to green numbers, he's just been playing so poorly, and I don't think that we get an extended period of bad golf from Tony Finau. I think he's too good for that. I'm hoping this kind of turns into a birdie fest and he can shoot something really, really low here. So my win is Tony Finau. I don't super love it, but it's more of a, like, I hope he wins type of pick.
Yeah. How much do you look at, for shorter courses with bigger hitters, do you look at the strokes gained around the green type stuff? Because it's almost a weird situation in which, I mean, if Tony Finau goes to like Sony, like he's just overpowering that course, right? Yeah. And so, like, he's going to have like weird and different shots than some other guys. Is that something that when you're evaluating some of this, you look at it?
Yeah, for sure. There's actually there's a Twitter thread going around right now where I've always, and you and I have talked about this, I've always kind of hated like the proximity from different areas, because you never know like how much they're hitting from there. But there's actually some stats coming out now where it basically takes every player and it takes, you know, it takes what their normal shots would be on holes and puts it on El Chameleon and says, okay, well, he's going to have 5 shots from inside 100 yards. He's going to have 7 shots from 175 to 200 or whatever that is. And then you can kind of look at that and say, okay, is he good in the ranges that he's going to have a lot of shots from? So yes, this is something that I think as more data comes out, we're starting to unlock this a little bit more. And it's going to be really, really interesting the next couple of weeks and months to find out, hey, this guy's really good in this area, and on this course, he's probably going to have a lot of shots from there. We'll probably talk about that quite a bit.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Man, I love stuff like that. That's fascinating to me. We actually have the same guy for top 10, Emiliano Grillo.
It's because he can't win, right, Kyle? Like, you have to put him in the top 10.
I think he's plus – I think I saw plus 300 for top 10. He's actually the all-time leader in strokes gained on this course. If you look at the last – so I think it's minimum of 12 rounds. And if you look since 2010, it goes Emiliano Grillo, JJ Spahn, Siwoo, Russell Knox, and Anirban Lahiri. This is from datagolf.org. And so he's had a lot of success at this event on this course, 300 to, plus 300 to finish in the top 10 for somebody who's not, you know, I think he's just somebody who doesn't get talked about. And
no.
You know, he's another guy kind of like Joaquin Niemann, to where you're like, this is probably one of the, like, the 25 or 40 best ball strikers in the world, and he just doesn't get talked about. So I really like him for top 10 this week.
Yeah, same do I. To pile on, he again is hashtag team no putt. And what I like about and what we've seen from El Chameleon in the past, which I believe it's past Palm Greens, and they have to keep them a little bit slower because this is a coastal course. If you get them too fast and the wind kicks up, you run the risk of losing it. So what we've seen on slower greens is it kind of neutralizes – I don't want to say it neutralizes the good putters, but it raises the bad putters. Because if you think about this, on really fast greens, you know, any fraction of a miss gets magnified. And, you know, it's a lot easier to three putt if something goes wrong. These slow greens, which might be even slower thanks to the rain that we've seen this week, it's hard to three putt. These guys can just take a whack at it and knock it up there. So I'm even investing more in bad putters this week than normal. And Griot, who has the course history to go along with it, is certainly a bad putter. And I love everything else about his game.
Do you subscribe to the theory that like both really slow and really fast greens hurt good putters?
That's probably true. I'm trying to think through this in my brain. I suppose, right, where it's just kind of something outside of the norm, and you know, those are the two tails of like the bell curve, but anything in the middle, they're awesome at. I guess I could kind of get behind that.
Yeah, I remember. I think this was a theory that I talked about with the Solly at No Laying Up during, I think it was 16 US Open when DJ won. Now DJ has become a really good putter, so maybe this doesn't apply to him, but it just felt like those greens were so ridiculous that it's like, it does, like putting almost is like not, it just doesn't even exist. Like you just basically just take the best ball strikers from that single week. And that's just who your leaderboard is.
Yeah, I kind of like that. I'd like to look deeper into that. And speaking of deep, we've got some sleepers here. So you tried to mention him earlier. You've got Siwoo here, and I don't think I hate it. Talk to me about it.
Yeah, Siwoo is, again, like I was just looking at course history. He's had a lot of success here. Last year, I've got it pulled up. I don't know if he played last year. The year before, he finished third behind Patton Kizzire and Ricky Fowler at 15 under. He's just played great at this course. He doesn't have a ton of experience here. He's only played three times. But any time that Siwoo is like, I don't know, 75-1 or higher in an event like this, I'm just intrigued by it. Like I want to be in on that whenever it happens. I don't know that I totally understand him, which is maybe like the intriguing part, but if you go, I mean, just if you do what he did at the beginning of his career, like that's not nothing. Like that's a real thing and it doesn't just go away. So I'm fascinated by how the next few years of his career play out.
Yeah, I kind of love Siwoo as well here, but I went with Harry Higgs, who is, you know, coming off a solo second at Bermuda, and quite frankly, outside of a literally historic round from Brendan Todd, he would have been your champion there. Brendan Todd runs out and shoots his best round in 500 rounds of his career, steals this thing away from him, and I can literally imagine Harry Higgs just like looking around like what happened. So I mean, what I think you get from him is obviously a guy who played well just a handful of weeks ago. And he's another one of these guys, especially because he's, you know, he's not a young guy. He's worked his way up Latin American tour, all this stuff. He's played a lot of events, but new to the PGA tour, and he's going to be volatile. You know, he's got six starts. Three of them are top 25s and three of them are missed cuts. Like, I think that's what you're going to continue to get out of him. So I'm just trying to catch the upward wave as opposed to the downward wave for a guy that I expect to be kind of all over the place.
Yeah, no, I like that. He did play well. He played really well at Bermuda. Former SMU teammate, Bryson. I think they're on the same SMU team.
That would make sense. Their years probably would have aligned, right?
Yeah,
somewhere in there.
I think that's right. I think that's right.
All right.
Okay, we got a couple of matchups here.
Yeah, let's rapid fire these real quick here. So I just picked out three that intrigued me, and the first one is Cameron Champ +115 versus Keegan Bradley as a pretty significant favorite -150. What do you think?
I'll go Keegan. I don't know. I can't do the Cam Champ thing. I mean, it's a good number for him, but
yeah.
Keegan's top 25 his last two events. I think he went from being kind of overrated to a little bit underrated now. I mean, he's the 45th, you know, ranked number 47 in the world right now. So, yeah, I'll go Keegan over Cam Champ.
This is definitely two different ways that these guys get off the tee, right? I mean, Keegan's usually like a total driving type of guy. Cam Champ is just like an absolute monster. I'm really torn on this, which is why I included it. I'll go with Cam Champ. I'll take the plus money. You know, obviously got his second win earlier this year, played well in Houston. I'm very interested to see what, you know, the 2019-2020 season holds for Cam Champ. Next up, Harris English, guy we talked a lot about, plus 105 versus Ches Reavy, who has struggled recently, but still the favorite here in this matchup, minus 135. What do you got?
Yeah, I'll go English. He's just hotter right now. I mean, he's just playing better golf. Reavy's had a bad fall after finishing T5 at the Tour Championship. I don't blame him. I'd be doing a celebratory lap after the season he had last season. So yeah, I'll go Harris English.
I'm with you there. We talked about it. This should be a good course for Reavy, but we've just not seen enough from him recently. I'm on English. And then the final one here, Lanto Griffin minus 125 versus Denny McCarthy minus 105. What do you got?
Yeah, the two of the eight best putters on the PGA Tour right
That's
now.
That's why I picked them.
Denny McCarthy is number three in strokes gained. Lanto Griffin's number eight. I'll say McCarthy. I think that sometimes, and again, this is like super no data to back it up, but I think sometimes when you win, you sort of, it's just hard to maintain it at that level. You're kind of climbing the mountain, you win, and then all of a sudden you're like, okay, well, I won, now what? You start looking around. Yeah. So I'll just, for that reason alone, I'll go Denny McCarthy.
Okay, I'll take Griffin. I think you're absolutely right on that. I mean, we've seen it a lot. We've seen Hudson Swafford do it. We've seen Gary Woodland do it. We've seen, I mean, just last season, Shane Lowry felt like he did it. You win, you can breathe a sigh of relief, and then it's like, oh, crap, I actually have to go back to work now. But I'll take Griffin here. I think he has a really, really high floor, and that's kind of what I'm looking for in these matchups. So, yeah, that's it. Now Kyle, that's going to conclude our Mayakoba Golf Classic preview. Any final thoughts? What, anything you're looking forward to before we cut this off?
Denny McCarthy, every time I hear his name, sounds like a middle reliever for the Pirates. I don't know why. Maybe it's Denny Nagel combined with Brandon McCarthy.
Oh, there you go. And your brain, like, just computes that as some, like, yeah, he probably throws like sidearm in this, yes, type of situation, right?
He's a sidearm, like, slider about 87 out of the side. And
I'll tell you what, if he wins this golf tournament, I will send you a McCarthy Pittsburgh Pirates jersey so that this can be like a thing. He wins this golf tournament, I'll have it at your front door.
Oh, that's incredible. I don't know. It feels good to say that out loud, because I've thought it for like the last 8 months. I think the story this week will obviously be the Kuchar thing, which is, I don't know, I get just sort of tired of it. And it's like, okay, we get it. We understand what happened. Let's talk about Victor Hovland and Joaquin Niemann, you know? It's a good opportunity for a couple of guys last 2 weeks to try to get to Tournament of Champions. So it should be fun. Should be a good event. Great viewing. Obviously, Mayakoba is beautiful, and I'm looking forward to it. I think we've had some good finishes here over the years between Kazire and Fowler, where they played. Didn't they play like 36 in a day, I think, a couple of years ago?
Oh, so, yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, it should be a good time.
Yeah, this is going to be a lot of fun. I'm stoked for it. And yeah, that'll do it for us. So that's Kyle Porter. Follow him on Twitter, Kyle Porter, CBS. I'm Rick Gaiman at Rick Run Good. Give us a shout, and we'll catch you next time.
See you, Rick.
See you, Kyle.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.